Welcome to eHealth Learning, inspiring professionals worldwide.
So welcome to Embodied Health Learning. And this evening, I'm hosting my colleague and friend, Dr. Betty Martin from close to Seattle, aren't you?
Yes.
And we're going to be talking about your book this evening, the new one, The Art of Receiving and Giving, which is available at wheelofconsentbook.com, did you say?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And you can also visit bettymartin.org and the schoolofconsent.org. Dr. Betty Martin is the founder of the School of Consent and teaches workshops on the Wheel of Consent all around the world until lockdown. And then you and Robin got really advanced at teaching it online. And a lot of the workshops involve one of the primary practices is waking up the hands, isn't it? So, and mm-hmm. then working on each other's hands. So that became difficult. But it's a pleasure to have you back, Betty. You've done some webinars with us before. And we had Robin a few weeks ago for a members webinar, which was great. She actually went through the difference between coaching and treatment model.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Which we might touch on again tonight. What our audience is bodywork, touch professionals and some movement professionals and embodiment coach people. But can I start by asking who did you have in mind when you wrote this book? I've done some of your professional trainings and I'm a big fan of the work. If people who know me will know that. but who did you have in mind when you wrote the book? Because as we've seen, you and I, in the calls that go out monthly, there's such a variety of ways that the work is being applied in social justice loads of beautiful areas. But how did you decide who to write the book for? Or is it for a wide range of people?
It's for a wide range of people. It's not just for practitioners. Mm. Some people have asked me that, and it's not. And I tried to write it so that it would be accessible to people who are not in the kind of bubble of groovy self-development stuff. You know, I wanted it to be accessible to your average truck driver. Mm. And I think it is. I don't know. I don't talk about chakras in there or anything like that. So it's very down to earth. It's very practical. It's a how-to. I take you through how to experience each of the different dynamics. And then I give you some theory.
Yeah. So this evening, there's probably some people who have experienced the work, workshops. If you're with us in Zoom, I invite you to raise your hand if you've been in a Wheel of Consent workshop with Betty or one of her certified trainers, instructors. That would be interesting to know. And if you've got any questions, we would love to hear them in the chat or the Q&A, but preferably the chat. And if you're live on Facebook, you can also pop some questions in for Betty. And if you've never heard, excuse me, of the Wheel of Consent, do you want to give us? You're about to. Yeah, if you're lost on the internet and you've stumbled across this live.
What the heck are these people talking about?
So Betty, for people who haven't or are a bit vague, how it can help touch practitioners, could you say a few words about how it's a useful practice to get into your skin and into your body to notice how to be a good touch professional?
Sure. Well, the Wheel of Consent came about through my work as a touch professional. I was a chiropractor for 30-some years. And then after some in-depth erotic awakening exploring that I went through for my personal reasons, I came to a point where I wanted to offer that kind of experience to clients. So I closed my chiropractic office in this small town and moved to the city and opened up another studio where I started offering sex coaching hands-on, which means that rather than consulting or talk therapy. I would engage with people with touch, sometimes erotically, sometimes not, so that they could learn, so that they could have experiences which they would not be likely to have otherwise. And so they could learn how to be in their skin, relax, enjoy themselves, communicate, notice what they want, what they don't want, just access a bunch of skills and an awareness of the goodness and wholeness of their own eroticism. And that's where the Wheel of Consent came from. So it came from me being a practitioner. And it came from a game that I learned at a workshop some years before. The game was developed by Harry Faddis called the 3-Minute Game. And if you've been anywhere near me, you've heard of it, or probably anywhere around Julian, you've probably also heard of it. But it's two questions. It's a game for two people. And you each ask each other these two different questions. The questions are, what do you want me to do to you for 3 minutes? And what do you want to do to me for 3 minutes? And if you ask each other those two questions, you'll find out that, well, for one thing, there's a lot of fun that opens up because, oh my gosh, what do I want you to do to me for 3 minutes? Hell yeah, I can think of some things. And same thing with the other way. I can think of some things that I'd like to do to you for 3 minutes. When I learned that and then took it back to my client sessions, I narrowed the question because I was just different what I was teaching. So now I say, how do you want me to touch you for 3 minutes? Which of course, a lot of people can't answer or struggle with. And then how do you want to touch me for 3 minutes? Which people, it completely confuses people and throws them off. But nevertheless, what I noticed asking people those two questions was how confused we are, how hard it is to ask for what we want. Sometimes we don't know what we want, how vulnerable that is, how difficult it is to receive a gift that's just for us. And, you know, and how, you know, even if it's for me, you're touching me the way I have asked. Is it okay to change my mind? Can I say stop? Can I, you know, all these things came up and it showed me that. First, it showed me that each of those four dynamics have something different to teach me. And each of them is a different experience. So either when we play these four rounds, either you're doing what I want or you're doing what you want. And it's a very different experience for both of us. Or I'm doing what I want or I'm doing what you want. And that likewise is a very different experience for both of us. So playing with it with hundreds of people taught me that each of those four is a very different experience. And each of them has a different way that it will challenge you, and it's guaranteed to challenge you. Julian can vouch for this. And each one has a different way that it feeds your heart and the different way that it sort of taps into a spiritual principle and a different way that it can feel sexy depending on the context. So then I began really wanting to help people. What my sessions do now and what my training does now with practitioners is I want you to be able to experience each of the four quadrants and be able to tell them apart and be able to find what's the aha for you in this quadrant. What's the aha for you in this quadrant? Because it'll be different. So that's where the Wheel of Consent came from. It's also kind of a sneak preview to what the Wheel of Consent is. The Wheel of Consent is the overlap of these two questions, who is doing and who's it for. I may be doing for you or I may be doing for me, and it's a very different experience. Yeah, and a lot of fun and challenging. Because whatever stuff you have about touch, about asking for what you want, about receiving, it's all going to show up. And stuff that you didn't weren't even aware of is going to show up. So it's guaranteed to challenge, which is why I think of it as a practice. It works best as a practice that you can kind of put in a container and go into. And then when you're through, you close the door and you go back to your regular life.
So as practitioners, we're trained to be in, so we've got the four quadrants and one of them is serve. And we're trained to be there. And we're trained to learn clever things to do there for the other, for the receiver of our skills in the treatment model. And what I think the wheel is great for is, okay, you're trained and this is where you should be. But have you looked at the stuff that's outside of that channel? Because if it's out of your awareness, there's bound to be stuff there, which we all find. I just wanted to throw that in, that, you know, if you're listening and you think, well, yeah, you know, I've done my great training and no, I know where I'm supposed to be with serving, and this is perhaps not for me. I've not met anybody that didn't learn something and didn't benefit from going into take and seeing what they want and noticing. So that leads me on to a question about, you know, if we have some treatment options and we inform the client, the idea of informed consent, so they may have a frozen shoulder or something, and we say, oh, there's three ways that I usually find are useful for that, and we tell the client, there are tools to micro skills, aren't there, to slow down and get the client to choose from maybe a sample of that kind of touch or something that's embodied and that they're feeling and choosing. This is another thing that I think the wheel is great for, which you call bossy massage as a practice. When we have clients and we empower them with the choice to experience something and see if they really feel that that's useful and for them, and give them a few options. Do you have something to say about the difference between informed consent in the mind, like I tell you what your options are, and then kind of practice about embodied consent?
Well, I think to understand that, we have to back up to the difference between a treatment model and a coaching model. Because most of my work has been in the coaching model, which is what I'm going for is for the client to learn their own embodiment and their own empowerment and learn how to notice what they want. It's a pleasure-based model, which not all treatment is, of course. So what I want is to help the client learn how to notice pleasure in their bodies, how to be comfortable with it, how to notice what they want, how to communicate what they want, what they don't want, what their boundaries are. So it's a very different outcome that I'm going for. So that's what I call a coaching model, because the point is for the client to lead and to learn about themselves. In a treatment model, which a lot of body work is, it's, I have the skill to work on your frozen shoulder and I know what to do. You don't really know what to do. And so what you're paying me for is to use my skill and work on your frozen shoulder. That's a very different kind of outcome desired than the treatment, than the coaching model. So I think it's really important to distinguish those. If I have a frozen shoulder and I'm coming to get on your table, I don't care what you do. I just want you to do what I want you to bring your skills forward and do the thing that you've been trained to do. If I'm coming to you for coaching and I'm looking to reclaim my sexual sovereignty, that's a very different kind of experience that's going to be. And if I'm coming to regain my sexual sovereignty, then I need to learn how to notice what I want and make choices. That's the primary skill. It's embodied, of course, but it's not about the body work. It's about the experience of slowing down and choosing and noticing and communicating, all those things which I need if I'm going to be sovereign. So I think it's really important to distinguish that. If I'm going to a surgeon, I don't want to direct what he's doing. Like, I just want you to do your thing and do it well, because you know how to do it. I don't know how to do it, you know? So that distinction is really important. And so the bossy massage, it came out of this context of coaching where people are learning to notice what they want and communicate it. And I had a client, this was when I was doing the erotic coaching and sex coaching, I had a client who saw me for a number of times, and she was in good shape. She was functional and she was okay. But she just wanted more freedom and joy in her sexual experiences. So the third or fourth session in, I said, we're going to practice you asking for what you want, because I noticed that's hard for you. She says, yeah, it is. I said, okay, climb up on the table. I had a massage table. Climb up on the table and get comfortable however you like. And when you tell me to do something, I'll do it. And I won't do anything except exactly what you ask for. And she said, okay. So we were both clothed. She got up on the table, she laid down, and she lay there for 45 minutes. And I thought, you know, is she asleep? No, she's not asleep. You know, I thought maybe I should remind her. I thought, no, I told her I was going to wait. So I'm going to wait. So I sat, you know, sort of by the side. And after 45 minutes, she said, put your hands on my feet. So I went to the foot of the table. I rested my hands on her feet. And she didn't say rub her feet. She said, put your hands on my feet. So I put my hands on her feet and I just sat there for about 5 minutes. And then our time was up. And she got up off the table with tears in her eyes. And she said, you have been telling me that I have a choice about how I'm touched, but I never knew it until now. Changed her life, changed my life too. Because then I realized, oh my gosh, you have to have an experience of choosing, or you don't know that you can choose, you know? Mm. And so that led to what I call the bossy massage, which is what Julian's talking about here, which is that it's kind of a misnomer, because it's not really a massage, but it's the receiver on the table asking for what they want step by step. And they ask for, you know, put your hand here, you do that for 5 or 10 seconds, and then you step back and then let them notice what they want next. And then they ask for that, and then you step back. There's a video on YouTube, you can see it. But it's an experience. You're not going to get a luscious, yummy massage out of it. It's an experience of, oh, this is what it's like to notice what I want and to ask for it and to actually get it. Oh my gosh, that changes everything. Because how often do we, when we're touched, we think, well, we have to go along with it because I guess it's good for me, because I don't know, somebody told me it's good for me. And so this completely counters that, the tendency that we have to go along with stuff that we think we're supposed to like or somehow. So yeah, and again, that's really not about the body work. It's really not even about the touch. It's about the experience of noticing and choosing. Yeah. So, you know, do I want my massage therapist to do that with me? Probably not, because I'm coming to them for a massage. But in some instances, it might be helpful to do it at least to some degree. if your client is new to being touched or seems resistant to being touched, or, you know, the first time that I got on the table and had somebody do that for me, I was amazed at how luxurious it was to not be touched until I wanted it. It's like, oh my gosh. And to just lie there and just ponder and notice, oh, what do I want next? I don't know. Maybe, oh, this is what I want. And so I can see it would be useful in some massage settings where the client was, you know, perhaps resistant or afraid or not really realized that they had a choice about it. But its purpose is to learn to notice what you want and ask for it. And it's a very powerful experience of that, because it's an embodied experience. Yeah.
I did a session quite like that the other day. And in my role, it felt very bitty, but we did like 5 minutes of this. And, but the person was so happy with the session. It was a treatment exchange. So I received like a regular sort of shiatsu massage, and it was amazing. And that, like you say, I wanted to just have them do what they do well. And I received, and then we had a break, and then they had some things going on in their body, and we addressed those in a treatment way, but with them asking, and it was unusual for them to ask for what they want and to really tailor the session. And I can see within the treatment model, some people come for a shiatsu or a sports massage, or they go to a spa. And I think another place where, like you teach, we've all been touched in ways pre-verbally as babies and infants, and we've had experiences in the womb that we may not have liked. Our nervous systems get used to going along with things. And then you go and you pay for a massage, or you go on holiday and you go to the spa. And then maybe the massage, you would like it a bit deeper, but you don't want to say so. Because you don't want to be rude. So here's a relatively good place. What you want.
Yeah, exactly. I when I'm in trainings, I always ask people, when you're on the massage table, how many times did you go along with stuff that you didn't like? All the time. You know, why do we do that? I don't know. Well, a lot of reasons why we do that, but yeah.
And the other place I think this practice is really useful for those who are experienced and trained practitioners is the transition between an intake. Like you said, if you lie down and you're, what do I want today? Maybe that client's been to us 10 times and had some different types of massage, and they might not know in their mind what they want that day. You know, do I want a craniosacral, or do I want a something else? And we could build into our practice a moment for them to notice and choose what they want. Yeah. Or I think Katie, our colleague, said she's been building in, where would you like to sit? Would you like to move, you know, to do the intake? Would you like to sit by the window? Should we move the chairs over there? Noticing whether people are comfortable making those simple choices gives us a lot of information as to whether they are embodied and empowered enough to voice, for example, if they want it deeper in the middle of the session, some pressure.
You were talking about the hands. I wanted to come back to that, unless we have a question.
There is a question there. Says, irreciprocal. How does this work in unequal client-therapist relationship? Oh, in an unequal client, give, receive, PS, I'm also not a body worker. So how does this work in an in unequal client-therapist relationship? So,
well, it doesn't.
No.
So what we're talking about is the wheel of, I'm guessing you're asking about the wheel of consent, because, you know, I'm doing what I want, or I'm doing what you want. And that dynamic is a fundamental dynamic that underlies all of human relating. But in a therapist client or a body worker client, you're only using one of those dynamics. You're using, the body worker is doing their thing for the benefit of the client, period. Everything that you do should be for the benefit of the client, and within your boundaries, of course, your professional boundaries and your personal boundaries, but it's for the benefit of the client. What Julian was describing trade was with a colleague.
Mm.
Yeah, it wasn't with a client.
It might be worth noticing there are a number of trainings worldwide that use Betty's Wheel of Consent as an underpinning, and some of those somatic coaching practices within the coaching model will engage two-way reciprocal touch, but with really mm-hmm. clear ethical and practical boundaries around just the hands and mm-hmm. no further than the elbow, for example, mm-hmm. and where the client is maybe receiving touch, the practitioner may be receiving touch, but they're still doing it for the client and they're not mm-hmm. doing confusing things like touching anywhere that would lead to limerence or confusion.
And those are particular kind of practices. They're not, this is not a massage school kind of practice. This is a sex coaching or a sexological bodywork practice where the client is there to learn skills, which is, again, it's a coaching model. Yeah.
So we'll go to the hands thing, Betty, but can I mention just before that there's been this huge, a lot of people have found the wheel useful in the Me Too movement, and in the nervous system of the individual. We all can tell, and sometimes we get it wrong. Usually we can tell if the touch that we're receiving is really for us or if it feels like it's for the other person. And sometimes, sadly, with the best intentions of the practitioner, they may have thought they were serving. They may have overzealously been doing some de-armoring technique or something. And the client may in the session have felt that everything was great. And then afterwards they reflect on it or they discuss with a friend or they just feel out of the context of the session, they're not now clear who that touch was mm-hmm. for. And then mm-hmm. there's a needle swings along in their
there's
body.
A, oh shit moment.
Yeah. And then suddenly that serve was not serving me. They were taking and they were the shadow of that they were stealing. So I need to report this person. So I think this practice is really important for the people who are wanting to stay firmly in serve to mm-hmm. embody the experience of taking and to really mm-hmm. go into that for everyone. Mm-hmm. I really believe that's mm-hmm. important.
And that gets back to the hands. So I want to go back and start there.
Great.
I'm guessing that if you are a hands-on practitioner, your hands are very good at taking in information. In my chiropractic days, I'm palpating and I'm feeling for what's the movement in the joint. Does it move this way? Does it move this way? What's the muscle tension? And your hands get to where they can feel very subtle and slight differences. And the quality of what we can offer in our body work depends on us being able to take in information with our hands. We can't deliver body work unless we can take in information with our hands. So that's, I'm guessing that you people are already really good at that. And in a professional setting, that's essential. I'm taking in information about the client. I'm integrating that into what I'm doing. It may be fairly intuitive, often is. And sometimes it's more cognitive, like, okay, this joint's moving this way. But it's the foundation for what we do. In the Wheel of Consent, there's another side of touch. And that is touching someone else for your own pleasure and enjoyment. It has no place in your office. I'm talking about amongst your loved ones. So when you are with your partner or your sweetie or your play buddy or whoever, then your hands are maybe going down their back or going through their hair. And the point is not to deliver some technique to them. The point is to what feels pleasant to my hands. Does it feel good to run my hand through their hair? Does it feel good? when I go down the shape of their back, do I just feel the luscious curves and shapes, and that makes me feel good. And that I have noticed is very often very difficult for body workers. It's often very difficult. And so, and I think one reason is because we have taken our professional guidelines really seriously. I'm not here to seal up this client. I'm here to serve this client. So by golly, I'm going to be really clear. And that's really important. And so we get so good at that, that we sort of turn off, we cut off that connection to pleasure that our hands can feel. And that's a problem when we get home. So in my trainings, we start out with waking up the sensory intake and the pleasure intake of our hands on an object so that we can just, so it's not about a person. And this is in the book, and there's video on it on my website. And then we once we learn to experience pleasure with our hands, it's often a fairly emotional moment. And it's often accompanied by feelings of self-doubt and shame and fear and guilt. And even though it's just the pen, you know, that we're just wired. And so we start with that. And then we move on to feeling, this is in the workshop, feeling someone else's hand and arm. And this is where it's very often difficult for practitioners, and very often brings up feelings of shame and guilt and doubt and like, I'm not allowed to do this. And very often, it's funny, body workers' hands are very good at technique, but they're usually or very often not good at just feeling the shape of the thing for their own pleasure. And so oftentimes it's a matter of teaching them how to slow down and not get, you know, stop the technique and come back to just feeling this arm. What does this arm feel like? But it's really crucial for practitioners to get that, because for one thing, it makes a world of difference at home. And for another thing, when you can, this is the, what the taking quadrant that Julian was talking about. The taking quadrant is the name that I give to the quadrant where you are doing, but it's for you. You're doing what you want instead of doing what the other person wants. You're doing what you want. And it's really helpful to wake up that quadrant and find out what that feels like and what the experience of it is. And notice that it's not the same as stealing. It's receiving a gift that is freely given to you with a full heart by the person you're touching. They're saying, yeah, I'm yours, explore. So when you can experience what it feels like to touch for your own pleasure, then when you're touching for the benefit of the other person, then it makes a lot more sense and becomes more clean, because this touching for yourself is not sort of sneaking in over here. And you know, it's okay to enjoy the massage you're giving, of course. But of course, you're not using it to gratify yourself. You're not using it to excite yourself. You're not using it to, you know, think what a wonderful person you are. You're in service. It's not about you. So what Julian was describing was how helpful it is to have the taking quadrant where you're doing what you want, so that it kind of cleans up the serving quadrant where you're doing what the other person wants. And makes a world of difference when you're back home. Yeah. Yeah.
and you're kind of treading yeah. that route of knowing that, oh, I can ask for and at home. And get those needs met consciously. If you feel that they're creeping into your practice anywhere, you can take care of it because you've learned the micro skills to create time to do that.
And you can recognize it.
Yeah.
You can recognize it.
Yeah. The feeling of I want to do this and how it plays out. And exactly.
Yeah.
Someone's asked a question which would take us on to the direct. We've just been talking about the direct route. Betty's been talking about waking up the hands, the direct route to pleasure. There's a question here which brings us perfectly on to the difference between the direct and indirect routes, which is from Jan. How about the pleasurable satisfaction of feeling the client's body responding to the treatment?
That's lovely. It's a bonus of the work that you're doing. It's great to enjoy what you do. Absolutely. And it's great to have some pleasure and satisfaction in what you do. But you're not doing it for that purpose. You're doing it for the benefit of the client. And I think that's what the difference is. And the direct indirect pleasure that Julian was talking about, I think that's worth saying too, because what I learned when I was working with clients and we were touching each other, because it was a coaching situation, it wasn't a treatment situation. I would be coaching them in how to touch for their own pleasure, which was hard for most people. And I'd be saying, you know, like they say, this person's feeling my arm. I'd say, okay, slow down, feel the shape, feel the texture. I'm sort of coaching them in attending to the sensation in their hand. And very often they would say, yeah, but giving you pleasure is what gives me pleasure. And that got me thinking about, well, that's a different kind of pleasure. And so I noticed that what I was trying to teach them was a direct route in from this sensory nerve straight into the pleasure center, bing, it lights up. It's just the pleasure of what the sensation is in your hands. And I call that a direct route. It's just like lights up. And then there is, okay, I'm touching you and I see you melt. And that brings me pleasure. That's what I call an indirect route, because I have to get a response from you or I don't have any pleasure. So in a professional setting, it's great to, you have this kind of satisfaction. You feel the person change under your hands and it's lovely. In a personal or intimate setting, if you're stuck in the indirect, that means, okay, I'm gonna touch you this way because it's gonna make you melt or get turned on or smile. And then that's gonna make me experience pleasure. And that's lovely, unless it's your only route, because then you have to get that moan or you have nothing. So now I'm trying really hard to get you to moan and you are trying really hard to respond correctly because you want to make me happy. So now we're both in performance mode. And what's real about it? Nothing. So that's the direct and indirect. We need both in our lives, but more often the direct is cut off. And so we depend on the direct. So if you hear yourself or your partner saying, but giving you pleasure is what gives me pleasure, that's what they're talking about. They're talking about, it's like throwing out a boomerang. I have to catch you. And, you know, I have to catch your response in order to feel good about myself. And that can be problematic. I have certainly experienced both sides of that. And I imagine that most of you have as well. Yeah.
In the middle of that, Betty, is, I remember we covered this on some training, like the questions of who's doing and who is it for. If we're both in performance mode, I'm doing hoping that you're going to moan or smile, and you can feel that, and you're like, whoa, maybe I should moan or smile. And then who's doing what and who is it for? It gets completely lost.
Yeah.
So if we have clients on the table that can't say, maybe the pressure point we're working on is hurting. And this is another discussion and covered on eHealth around good satisfying pain and pain that's actually warning to get off. If I can't voice that, then the who's doing and who's it's for, it's kind of the same thing. Like I'm doing it because I think it's relieving your pain. But if you can't voice what's serving you and what's not serving you, then again, we get in a yucky place of who's that for? Yeah. And why are they not voicing the truth of what they're feeling? Yeah. So I think it does also relate in a therapeutic treatment model. If our clients don't voice what they're noticing.
I think this is where it's really important to, and I don't know how much of this is taught in bodywork training these days, but in creating enough spaciousness for your client to be able to speak up by asking them, by slowing down, by going, you know, at 2 minute segments and 2 minute segments and checking in and checking in, so that they, so that you're just making more room for them, because it's hard to speak up if you feel, I'll speak for myself, it's hard to speak up if I feel like I have to make room for myself and somehow, you know, make the person listen. Like, it's really hard to speak up in that case. But if a person pauses and asks me what I notice, well, then it's much easier to speak up. So I think that's part of what we learn as body workers is hopefully how to say things and how to ask and how to slow down and how to check in as we're going.
I think these elements you've mentioned and excuse me, the facilitator training that you offer reminded me of things that should be in place in a treatment model or a coaching model around taking care that you have your basic needs met, and therefore you're having the logistical container, and then a conscious invitation that in this session, we will take pauses for you to voice and notice and feedback and ask for that to be part of the container to begin with. So you said sometime, many times probably, that it could be called the wheel of agreements, right? So I think this work is also very good for not shooting over assumptions that practitioners make, perhaps that I did around, well, the client knows, you know, this, that, and the other. Maybe they don't. And it would be really settling and sense of safety providing to say so and to map those. Even on a session by session basis with clients that you know, to be reminded that who this is for, you know.
Excuse me.
So I wonder from your trainings, maybe we could speak, is there more you want to say about the hands and the book? But I was going to think about now mentioning your trainings for professionals. There's Like a Pro, there's the facilitator training, and how for people working within the treatment model, these trainings, we've covered some of it, why it's useful, but if there's anything that more you'd like to say about the trainings you offer.
We offer a 5-day in-person training called Like a Pro. And we've learned how to do that online this year. So we offer it online as well. And it is to help you as a practitioner experience each of the four quadrants so that you recognize them in yourself and so they make sense to you. And then you can see how they fit into your own practice, because we have practitioners from all kinds of formats. We have body workers, we have massage therapists, we have sexological body workers, we have sex workers, we have therapists, coaches, doctors, teachers. You know, if you're in the helping other people business, you need this course. So the main thing is the first 3 days we spend just helping you experience each of the four quadrants so that you recognize them. And then we come back the last 2 days and talk about, okay, what's this got to do with your practice? And again, it's going to be applied differently depending on what kind of practice you have. And there are different kinds of question, different ways to communicate if you, depending on what your practice is. So if you're in a treatment model, say you're a physician, it's going to be a different kind of communicating about the thing that you're going to do than it would be if you're a sexological body worker or a sex worker. That's going to be a very different kind of communication. And so we cover those principles. And in a treatment model, which most body work is, you're going to be, the client is paying you for your time and your attention and your expertise. And your expertise includes knowing what not to do, which I learned that in chiropractic. It's like the thing that you pay me for is not to do the thing, is to know what not to do. So in a treatment model where I come to you and you have these skills that you know what to do with me, then you want to communicate what those skills are and what the options are and what it looks like. And then ask the client, how does that sound to you? So it'd be something like, you know, this is the way it usually works. I do this and you do this and then this, and then I move this way and this is how it usually works. How does that sound to you? And now you're making space for them to notice, oh, that sounds great, or that sounds good except for this part. And then you negotiate what can be done. And actually, this is a good place to talk about consent, because after I'd been teaching these consent workshops for 10 years, I decided to look up consent in the dictionary, and I was rather surprised because it says basically that consent means agreeing to do something that the other person asks for. So it doesn't say anything about asking for what you want, but it's agreeing to do what the other person wants. And so that's only half of the picture of consent. And very often people think consent means permission. There's a problem with permission. Permission only applies in the dynamic that I'm doing what I want to do to you. I need your permission to do it. If I'm going to build a garage, I have to go down to City Hall and get a permit to build my garage. I'm building my garage because I want to, not because City Hall wants me to. So permission applies when it's something that I want to do to you and I need your permission. So that's great. But what if I say, will you scratch my back? And you say yes. Where does permission fit into that dynamic? It doesn't. I don't know of a word that's specific to that dynamic. But will you scratch my back? It's not a question of permission. So in this one dynamic in the Wheel of Consent, permission fits. May I feel you up? May I explore your legs? May I come over and borrow your truck? May I nibble your ear? May I, you know, play with your feet? That's one dynamic. And the other is, will you? Will you scratch my back? Will you rub my feet? Will you take me to the airport? Will you make me a cup of tea? Will you rub my back? So the may I is about permission, but the will you, permission doesn't fit there. And the will you is where, will you? Yes, I will, is where we are with clients, with our bodywork clients. So they're essentially saying, will you give me a massage when they walk in the door? Although they may not say it like that, but that's essentially what they're asking for. So if you then turn around and in the course of your treatment say, may I? Now you've confused who it's for. And so if you say, may I put my hand here, or may I get started, or, you know, may I move you this way, or then in their heads, they it's kind of automatic. They're going to think, oh, this is for the therapist's benefit. And you don't want that. You want it to be clearly for their benefit. So I gave a little talk one time called Why You Should Never Ask Permission for Practitioners. Why, as a practitioner, you should never ask permission. What you should be doing instead is making an offer. This is how this usually looks, or this is one way we could do this. How does this sound to you? Or is this something that you would like? Or does this sound useful to you? Or would you like me to do this? Or when you're ready to start, tell me and then I'll start and I'll wait until you're ready. So may I really has no place in a practitioner's situation. That's my little soapbox on that topic.
It's great because I went to that little session. I remember that. And if you just spy it in an email, you think, oh my God, how rude, and why you should never ask permission. But when we started this evening, I said to you, my bodywork teacher said, be very careful using that kind of language. That was in 2001. But like, if you're trying to get comfortable and it requires climbing up on the couch with them to do a certain hold, and you say things like, could you just shuffle down a little bit for me? I wonder in 2001 if they'd come across your work anyway, but something had given them this awareness of the languaging of, can you do this for me and just lie down now for me? And they gave a little demo of how often that gets used. And we all found it very funny because, you know, this isn't for me. If they're catching it, and if we keep doing it, even if they're not catching it and thinking, why is he asking you to do this for him? It's going in subconsciously, and that sort of colluding of politeness of, oh, I must make it more easy for them. And it also plays into the client performance of, oh, yes, I feel much better. It's much better. And often that is a performance.
I've been there.
I
think there is one place where asking for you makes sense. And that is I'm doing body work, you're laying this way or that way, and I can't reach this part unless I ask you to move over or roll over or whatever, then that it is kind of for me because it's more comfortable for me to work this way, but it's still for you. You know, so I think that's one way it makes, that's the one place it makes sense. Like, okay, I need to reach your hip now. It would be easier for me if I could do this way. Does that work for you? That's kind of an exception. Get up on the table for me. Just like, well, wait a minute, who's this for?
So are there any questions for Betty on the book? We've got here.
Oh, my goodness. We have a bunch of questions in the chat.
Oh, you've dealt with them, I think.
And is this... this is streaming on Facebook. Does it then live there?
It will live there.
Okay.
And it will also, we'll make a Vimeo link, which can be shared as well.
Okay.
So it'll be accessible in both ways, ongoing.
So the book, wheelofconsentbook.com. And when you go to that website, you can also download a free chapter so that you can see if it's worth your time or not.
And there are many
videos. And there's also on that website, there's a place to sign up for free events. I do on webinars every month on waking up the hands, which is what we talked about, listening turns and reading salons, Q&As, and they're free. All that's on there. And a bunch of other interviews and stuff that I've given. Pretty fun.
Yeah. I obviously really recommend this work, as I keep saying, and the global community that Betty supports with group supervision, and we meet monthly, is really inspiring. People working with birth and social injustices and power dynamics in governments and all aspects of life. So I feel as body workers, we have a rare opportunity to work with these kind of felt dynamics with our clients and in ourselves. And I'm really happy to be part of this global community of people exploring the wheel and how to apply it in life to enrich life and to make life fairer, perhaps. So, yeah.
And I want to say too, go ahead.
I was just going to say, there's also loads of videos of Betty's practices and teaching on YouTube. So you've been very generous with your YouTube account. There's lots of stuff people can experience and listen to.
And
it's interesting.
On BettyMartin.org, there's a whole page of videos on how to apply this. And I want to say to my fellow body workers, healers, people, helpers out there, thank you, thank you, thank you. You're doing really important work. And make sure that you have a time on the table for yourself. Get on the table. Yeah.
Also to point out on the School of Consent, what's it? Schoolofconsent.org. There's a list of other events by Betty's facilitators all happening all over the world. So there's the main trainings, but there's also shorter introductory workshops and ways to experience this work local to you, hopefully. There's lots of facilitators around the world in different corners of the globe. So go on to the schoolofconsent.org and check out the events online and in person by other facilitators if you are far from the main events. Yes, and thank you, Betty, for this hour sharing about your book.
You are so welcome. Thanks for the promo.
You're very welcome. It should get out there. John, do you have any final questions or comments for Betty?
No, thank you very much, Betty. That was great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. Just to say that we've got coming up, so you're hosting Cordelia on Monday, I think, Julia.
Yeah.
And also next Tuesday, we have Mary Beth Sinclair talking about vision issues and chronic upper body tension, which is very interesting. That's the second part of her series there. And then on the 23rd, that's next Wednesday, we have Deb Dana, who's going to be talking about her work, polyvagal theory. Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, Monday's Cordelia talking about the embodiment and voice and like tracking our clients and noticing tension and what we notice in our voice as it shows up and what we might learn and inquire into with our practices. And that will be followed by a three-part course. So there's a free live stream on Monday. It'll be about half an hour to an hour with Cordelia. That's going to be exciting. So look out for that on Facebook. Thank you, Betty. Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
You're welcome.
Thanks, everybody, for coming.
Thank you.
Questions. Good night.
Bye-bye. Bye.